Mr. Ang Siasan, real one. Mr. Ang, could you tell us when and where were you born?
I was born in Singapore, 1911.
Where did you receive your education?
I was educated at the Anglo-Chinese School, Singapore.
Which standard did you pass?
Beg your pardon?
Which standard did you pass?
Oh, as Sydney, Cambridge.
Which year was that?
It was 1929.
Could you tell us what you were doing just before the war broke out?
I was employed by Mrs. Bonier Motors Limited as a cashier. And later, I was promoted as a bookkeeper. Just before the Second World War. They are the people who, you know, sponsored me to the Singapore Passive Defense, which was then called the Air Raid Precaution Unit. After attending a crash course in the services of firefighting, first aid, in advising the public on how to behave and what precautions to take in order to minimize injuries to persons and damages to properties. Also to advise on how and where to evacuate if situation demanded. And then after attending for about half a dozen lectures, I was given the rank of sergeant of a unit and posted me to the Serangoon English School, where I was in charge of about a dozen wardens, given the facility of a telephone so that we were able to take instructions from headquarters at the Paya Lebar Police Station, where our chief warden was operating. War practices were performed in which air raid sirens were sounded from headquarters. At the same time, the various unit posts were informed by telephone calls. As soon as sergeant received such information, the wardens on duty were ordered to patrol the streets, whereupon the householder would comply with our instructions, such as the taking of cover in their shelter and switching off the lights at night, advising pedestrians to take cover wherever possible. Vehicles traveling on the road were ordered to park by the roadside with headlamps switched off. The motorists would not be convenient because it would only take 5 to 10 minutes. The sounding of the all clear signal, the wardens would also respond to by whistling the all clear, and normal conditions of the area would then be restored. In order that the public might be acquainted with the requirements, these exercises had been continually practiced for about a month or so. The test of our efficiency was on the 8th of December, 1941, at about 4 a.m., the actual air raid by the Japanese Air Force arrived, and at the consequence of that raid, several parts of the cities were bombed. Although the area I was in charge was not affected by the raid, my wardens were at the post within 10 minutes. After the December incident, all wardens were informed that no more practices would be exercised and we should be on the alert for more air raids. Following that incident, more air raids came during the daytime. As most of our wardens were office workers, it was not possible for them to man their posts during the day. But however, it had been reported that a skeleton force had been stationed on many occasions. The war went on fairly well with the arrival of the battleship Prince of Wales and the gunboat Repulse at Singapore for protection. With the announcement of the sinking of these two battleships, it was the turning point of the war towards disaster. The morale of the British troops and the confidence of the people had been shaken. As the war deteriorated and when the Japanese army landed in Terengganu and Kelantan, most of the government officials, VIPs and commercial executives left Singapore in order to take refuge in other countries. The war was becoming worse when the enemy forces crossed the Strait of Johor and landed in Woodlands, when we experienced heavy shellings, mortars and cannons at night. These circumstances continued until we were disbanded. The wardens and I felt that this action was the preparation of the worst to come. A meeting was convened and we decided to destroy all records, logbooks, uniforms, helmets, in order that we could deny it of any connections with the previous government. 3 days after our meeting, we were told that the British army surrendered unconditionally to the enemy. The Serangoon English School premises, in which the medical auxiliary services and the air raid precaution unit formerly shared the occupancy, was taken over by the Japanese Imperial Army as Divisional Army Camp. For the next 3 days, the invaders make merry what appeared to us like their celebration for having accomplished that mission with final victory. That night, after the ceasefire, the atmosphere appeared to be peaceful, except for some barking of the dogs and some distant screaming by women and children in the neighborhood. What happened, I did not know. The next day, a couple of soldiers came to my house with a request for the borrowing of my car for their joyrides. They were greeted by my family, although very reluctant, but hypocritically acceded to their request. Fortunately, as my car had been idling for some weeks, it did not respond to the start, after which they proceeded to the next house for a better car. The next morning, the same soldier came, not having satisfied with the unsuccessful loot the previous day. This time they wanted the radio set. 2 days later, a soldier came requesting that all males over 12 and under 60 years of age were to meet their officer at the main road facing the camp to answer their interrogation. In response to their request, we went out informally without slippers, with the exception of my father, who was then 65 years old, and not knowing what the purpose of this meeting. I was the first few on the queue, which was interpreted by a Malay who spoke in broken Japanese to the officer. The question asked was, what was my occupation? To this I answered that I was working with a motor repair factory. For my answer, the interpreter might have mistook me to be a mechanic instead. As a mechanic, their feeling towards me was an asset to their country, and so they left me off at that stage. As for others, I did not stay to know their reply. On investigation later, I was told that those taken away did not return to their families, and only then did I realize that questioning of the roadside gathering was one important factor in deciding our fate, which meant life and death. After a week or so, one of the former colleagues came all the way from town, informing me that the Japanese authority wished that former employees of the motor firm could apply for their job. Under the new management style, the Shonan Jodisha Kaisha. After due consideration, I did not trust their good intentions, and I decided to stay put as I wished to have a long rest. A month or so later, with the aid of a few friends, I decided to take the opportunity of organizing a restaurant opposite the former British naval base at Silita. I renovated the shop house, which was then in a miserable state and deserted by the former tenant, into a respectable coffee house. This project went on quite well until foodstuffs were scarce and transport was difficult, and so it resulted in liquidation. I was again out of employment, and having learned that a biscuit factory near my place required the services of a driver for the distribution of their products, I immediately stepped in to apply. This new employment occupied me for a few months until I fell ill. The illness compelled me to leave, as it would take a long time to recuperate. As time went on, my daily necessities were hard to get. Money to support my family ran out, and I had to solve my problem single-handed. Everything in the market went underground. For example, rice, sugar, condensed milk, medicine, textiles. These commodities have to be obtained through brokers who would approach the black market operators for their supplies. Most of us were white-collar workers, previously did the black market trade, and if the compound permitted, they could plant their own vegetables and raise their own poultry in order to supplement their income. Inflation escalated every month due to black market operations. Only those who were rich or having contract jobs from the Japanese were able to enjoy luxury goods. Gambling houses, brothels were mushrooming everywhere in town, even the amusement parks. The society practiced every kind of evil, with the exception of theft and robberies, which I observed were rarely committed. This sort of condition prevailed for a period of about 3.5 years, till the middle of 1945, whereupon the Japanese unconditionally surrendered to the Allied Army by the order of the Imperial Government of Japan. That's it.
Mr. Ang, earlier you mentioned that your company, the Bonio Motors,
yes,
sponsored you for the passive defense services training.
Yes. Yes.
How did they sponsor you? In what ways?
Well, they choose some of the more of those people who are available during office hours and which have got replacements. That's why they sponsored me to there. And where there are people who are on the key post and are not sponsored. So that is why we went for the lectures.
Was it some kind of instructions from the government that the company had to send some people for training, or did the company took its own initiative?
Oh, no. I think that we received circulars from the government And but of course that was all voluntary, and our company thinks it is their duty, you know, to supply some of the staff for training.
Did you remember when did you join?
I think it's about 1941, beginning of 1941. Yeah. Yes.
Do you remember why did you decide to go for the training?
They want us to go for training, I mean. Oh, yes. Well, that is the protection of their property, you see, for the benefit of the company also. And I, for one, is for the protection of my family and our neighbors.
Do you remember how you were selected to go for the training, or did you have to go through any kind of interview?
No, we were called to the Victoria Memorial Hall for lectures, and later on for actual practices, training practices to operate the stirrup pump and so on. I couldn't remember whether it's they given us gas masks. I think they have. But they were all destroyed before the Japanese came.
Do you remember whether there were any kind of requirements before they decided to recruit the people for ARP training?
No. There were no special requirements. They know that all these employees from the private sector are English speaking and can read and write, and that's why they recruited us. But of course there were mechanics also, but they were not, they cannot read and write. They can only get instructions from the senior warden to get going when there was a raid.
Where was the location of the training?
I think it's the Victoria Memorial Hall, and after that they had the practical part of it at the garage under below Victoria Memorial Hall.
Do you remember who was the training officer?
Yes, there was one Englishman, but I cannot remember the name. Our chief warden in charge of the Serangoon area was our lawyer, Claude Da Silva. I don't know whether he's still living or he has migrated to other parts of the other countries.
Do you remember how frequent did you have to go for your lectures as well as for your practical sessions?
We went there during office hours. We were asked to attend, and we were being replaced. Our job is being replaced by somebody else from the office.
How long did this whole crash course last, as you mentioned?
I think it's about once a week for about 4 or 5 weeks.
How many people were in your class?
There were about 50 people in the class, comprising of government employees and the private sector.
After you came out of the class, you were posted to Simon Road.
Yes, Simon Road English, Serangoon English School, where we were given, I think, two rooms, one a resting room and one is office room. And we have got the use of the telephone in order to communicate with the police station.
Were you the only person in charge in that at that post?
Yes, I was in charge of about a dozen wardens. But of course, another unit will be in Tampines. Then I don't know what else, how many units there were for the whole division. We were called the division. We were one unit, one of the units in the G division.
Where was the headquarters of the G division?
Beg your pardon?
Where was the headquarters of the G division?
G division, the police, Palembang police station. Yeah. They allotted a room for them. And the room was also having so many telephones in order to communicate to all the various units.
The person in charge there was Claude Da Silva.
Claude Da Silva. And his assistant was, I think, is G. Lange, George Lange, I think. I wonder if he, I haven't seen him for a long time, whether he's still in Singapore.
For the Serangoon English School post, which area would come under your charge?
Our charge commencing from Lowland Road right up to Florence Road, and from Upper Serangoon Road right back to about Mental Hospital.
And only about a dozen of people were helping you to look after the area?
Yeah, yeah. No, a dozen people.
Was that sufficient manpower for you?
Well, actually, it's not sufficient. But most of the area inside, away from the main road and the sub road, there were not very much patrol needed. Most of them were having, kerosene lamps instead of electric lamps. So, I think they were, all these people are instructed already to put a lampshade where they can have only a hole to give them a little bit of light. So the light would not went out of the window to approach the sky.
What was the responsibility of the post at Serangoon English School?
The responsibility is, as I said, advise the household to, you know, switch off the light at night and go into shelter when there's rain and see that nobody is walking along the roads. And if there are any car patrolling running on the road, we ask them to stop, park the car by the side of the road and went into the any drain for coverage. That is all. There were no public shelter.
Not even a single air raid shelter in your area?
No air raid shelter except in the Serangoon English School.
What kind of air raid shelter was that?
It's you know, four walls made of sandbags and what you call a plank covering on top with also sandbags on the top. That is all.
Underground?
No, it's above ground.
How would you inform the residents of the area all these orders, instructions and requirements? Did you give them a lecture or did you go around to their houses?
At the initial stage, we did went house to house to advise them what to do. But later, when there was actual air raids, we only patrolled and shouted a whistle to the house where there's is against our precaution.
Do you remember whether there was any time that you gather all the residents together to give them general instructions?
No, we did not ask get them together. We only went house to house to advise them.
Did you have to report to the headquarters at G Division Police Station frequently?
No. They will contact our unit. They will contact our units whenever there's any practice. Well, of course, the one person in charge of the unit was myself, and they give a circular to us when will be the practice on the lookout, and when we are asked to call the wardens to be prepared. That's all. But in actual area, there was no circular. It's not practical in this case.
The wardens under you, who were they mainly?
The part belongs to a government servant. I think there were about 7 or 8 government servants and about 4 or 5 from the private sector.
Were they all staying within the area?
Yes, all within the area. That is why they allotted us to that post.
What was the specific duties of an ARP member?
Specific duty was we were given uniforms, helmet, and so on, so that we can identify ourselves as wardens from the government. And the duty was to advise the public what to do in case of a raid.
So where did all these wardens receive their training?
Yes, for those who have been in training, like Mr. Guan Chuan was then awarded as a corporal, and another Mr. Ang was awarded as lance corporal. And there were further, when we found that wardens are insufficient, we are allowed to recruit ourselves, recruit from our unit and report it to headquarters of the new recruitment.
Who would give training to these wardens?
Yes, there was one. There was one Englishman who gave lectures and gave pamphlets and show us the equipment in which we have got to operate.
So the wardens under you, they receive training from the same place where you were being trained yourself?
Yes, yes, yes.
For the new members, how would you train them? Would you send them for training or would you train them personally?
Well, just the same as we repeated